ki jai. ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Praying Sri Gaur Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adwaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki jai. Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Mathura Dham ki jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham ki jai. Jagannath Puri Dham ki jai. Ganga Maya Jamuna Devi ki jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai. Tulsi Maharani ki jai. Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Gaur Pramananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nivasesa Sunyavadi Paskatya De Satarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Vanchakalpachu Vishaki Pasanaviya Bachapati Tanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavi Namo Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. July 22nd, 2020, from Hawaii, over the internet, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 21, Instructions by Maharaj Prithu, Text 43. Tesham maham pada sarojarenum. Arya vahayari kiritamayu. Yam nichada bibrata ashupapam.
Yam nichada bibrata ashupapam.
Nasyat jamun sarva guna bhajanti.
Nasyat jamun sarva.
Tesham.
Tesham.
Of all of them.
Of all of them.
Aham.
Aham.
I.
Pada.
Feet.
Feet.
Saroja.
Saroja.
Lotus.
Renum.
Dust. Aryaha.
Aryaha.
Respectable persons.
Vaheya.
Shall bear. Adi.
Up to.
Kiritam. Helmet. Ayuhu. Up to the end of life. Yam. Which. Nichada. Always. Bibrataha. Carrying. Ashu.
Very soon.
Papa.
Sinful activities.
Nasyati. Are vanquished. Amum. All those. Sarvagunaha. Fully qualified. Bhajanti. Worship. Srila Prabhupada's translation. O respectable personalities present here, I beg the blessings of all of you that I may perpetually carry on my crown the dust of the lotus feet of such brahmanas and vaishnavas
until the end of my life. He who can carry such dust on his head is very soon relieved of all the reactions which arise from sinful life, and eventually he develops all good and desirable qualities. Srila Prabhupada's purport. It is said that one who has unflinching faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which means unflinching faith in the Vaishnava, or the pure devotee of the Supreme Lord, develops all the good qualities of the demigods. Yas yasti bhaktir bhagavata kinchana sarvar gunash tatra samasyate suraha. Bhagavatam 5.18.12. Prahlada Maharaj also said, Naisham matis tavad urukama angrim. Bhagavatam 7.5.32. Unless one takes the dust of the lotus feet of a pure Vaishnava on one's head, one cannot understand what the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. And unless one knows the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's life remains imperfect. A great soul who is fully surrendered to the Supreme Lord, after understanding Him fully and after repeatedly undergoing austerities and penances for many, many lives, is very rare. The crown of a king is simply a big load if the king or head of the state does not actually bear the dust of the lotus feet of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. In other words, if a liberal king like Prithu Maharaj does not follow the instructions of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, or does not follow the Brahminical culture, he is simply a burden on the state, for he cannot benefit the citizens. Maharaj Prithu is the perfect example of an ideal chief executive. Tesha maham pada sarorarenum arya veheyari kiritamayu yam nityada bribrata ashtupapam nas yatyamam sarva guna bhajanti. O respectable personalities present here, I beg the blessings of all of you that I may perpetually carry on my crown the dust of the lotus feet of such Brahmanas and Vaishnavas until the end of my life. He who can carry such dust on his head is very soon relieved of all the reactions which arise from sinful life, and eventually he develops all good and desirable qualities. So Srila Prabhupada speaks in this purport from the point of view of a king and a kingdom, a government, and then he also speaks in the beginning of the purport from anyone's point of view, that only the devotees have good qualities. The devotee gets all of the good qualities, ashu, as Maharaj Prithu says, very soon, and relieves the reactions of sinful life. Well, we know why we want to be free from the reactions of our sinful life, because the reactions to our sinful life are suffering, our money problems, our health problems, our relationship problems, all these problems are the results of our past sin. So naturally we want to be relieved from those. That's very obvious. But why do we want to develop good qualities? Why do we want to have good qualities? And it's interesting that even criminals want to believe that they have good qualities. So I've mentioned this before, an article I read some time ago about a woman who found out that her father had been a serial killer. And he was called by the police bind, torture, and kill, because that's how he killed his victims. And it appeared to his wife and children that he was an ordinary person. I mean, in retrospect, there were some red flags, but growing up with him, they had no idea, and then it turned out that he was this, you know, heinously evil person. So he was, of course, put in prison, and the daughter was writing about how conflicted she was in terms of her relationship with him, and she mentioned that he had written a letter to her from prison where he had said, you know, I'm basically a good person, but I made some mistakes. And I thought, how astonishing that is. It's just so astonishing. Something else I read actually just recently, which was about restorative justice, something a devotee friend of mine, Prana Prabhu, in Australia, has really talks about in terms of society in general, and then in terms of how we deal with classroom management, discipline problems in a gurukula. And the article was about some robber who had ended up brutally murdering the woman who was in the house in the course of his robbery, and how the family, the husband and the adult children of the murdered woman, agreed that they would ask for life imprisonment instead of the death penalty if the murderer would spend some time with all of them describing what happened and why he did it, and basically taking responsibility for his crime. And he agreed, but then when it came to it, he couldn't do it. He just said, I can't do it. I can't talk about what I've done. I just can't face it. I can't face them. I can't deal with it. And I think it's a general thing that we want to see ourselves as good. We want to see ourselves as having good qualities. And even people who are very aware that they're criminals, let's say in organized crime, they talk about honor among thieves, right? And they'll say, well, I take care of my family members, you know, I take care of my other brothers in the mafia, and or, you know, I'm patriotic or something. That it, somehow we even very, very cruel and evil people will cover their bad qualities in some way. They'll explain away, they'll rationalize their bad qualities and their evil deeds, because we want to see ourselves as good people. We want to have these good qualities. That's what we want. Sarva gunaha, which have all qualities, which here means all good qualities. We even do this in English, where we'll say, you know, a high quality sofa, you know, a high quality computer, and it's like, does that mean it's good quality? But, you know, when we talk about someone has qualities, we're generally mean they have good qualities. So why do we want good qualities? How do we get them, and how do we think we're going to get them and not get them? So why do we want them? Well, first of all, we feel a lot better about ourselves when we either have good qualities or can try to reinterpret what we do as being a good quality. And feeling good about ourselves is kind of essential to functioning. You know, people who don't feel good about themselves are depressed. They have a very hard time doing anything in the world. They have a hard time getting anything, right? There's so much research that shows that if we think we're a terrible person, we think we don't deserve anything, you know, we're down on ourselves, what they call low self-esteem, but even more than that, that we tend to have a pretty miserable life. You know, we tend to bring on ourselves all kinds of unnecessary sufferings and push people away and not even try to do anything. So it's a miserable thing, isn't it? You know, if we look at ourselves as being not full of good qualities. And, you know, we also want other people to like us. We've talked about this before, how in the biologically we're herd animals, we're social beings, and we need others to like us in order just for our physiological survival. We also need it for our sense of mental identity, all of our false identities. And, you know, ultimately our spiritual identity is part of a group that also likes us, that there are in the spiritual world, there are friends also, there are communities. So this desire to be liked, to be part of a group in this world, is coming from that place. We also want good qualities because if we understand anything about how the world works, we know that if we have good qualities, we'll get better karma. If I'm a kind and compassionate and caring person, then I'm going to do good activities, which will give me good karma. I'll have more sense enjoyment. I'll have better food. I'll have a pleasing romantic partner, I'll have nice physical facility, I'll have enough prosperity, whatever kind that I'm interested in, you know, and so forth. So those are all material reasons why we want good qualities. They're very strong. They're so strong, as I say, they motivate even very evil people to see themselves, to
to sort of frame themselves, to justify, rationalize themselves as being a good person. Now, the devotee also wants good qualities. It's not that the devotee doesn't care. It's not that a person free of all these material desires that, you know, I want to feel good about myself in the world and I want other people to like me and I want to get better karma, that if those are absent, that the devotee's like, well, I don't really care if I have good qualities or not. And we've talked about this many times. The devotee wants good qualities to please the Lord. And we can understand that view of the great devotee by thinking about our material relationships. We were saying in this world we want others to like us as part of our material reason. Generally, we want others to like us because that way we get what we need for our own physiological survival, our own psychological survival, and so on. We get access to resources that we need. But even in this world, this material world, conditioned souls, we sometimes want to have good qualities just to please somebody else, just to please someone that we care about, you know. I mean, sometimes Srila Prabhupada says that all the love in this world is nothing but lust, but there's some reflections of actual love here and there in this world when we really want to make someone happy for their happiness. We want to be a good person. We want to be a worthy person because doing so will bring happiness to someone that we love, that we care about, that will enrich their life by our good qualities. And that's the mood of the devotees. The devotees want to be full of good qualities so Krishna will be pleased, so Krishna will enjoy their company, that Krishna will get enjoyment from their company and get enjoyment from their service. I mean, you know, if you're cooking, you want to cook something nice, so the person who eats it will enjoy it. It's interesting that among the four varnas, this mood is particularly evident in the Shudras. I mean, obviously it can be evident in anyone, but it's particularly evident in the Shudras. And I realized that when I was staying at a devotee's home that was filled with original artwork. And I was thinking about how much effort it takes to create a painting, an original painting. These were absolutely gorgeous paintings. And then you give it away. You're creating something that someone else is enjoying. Right now, there's a room at the temple being fixed up for me to stay in, and the person fixing it up, he's painting the walls, and he's fixing the plumbing and the electricity and so forth and so on. And he wants everything to be beautiful. He wants everything to work well. He wants everything to be beautiful. He wants everything to line up. You know, and he has some egoistic pride in his work, obviously. But he's doing it so I'll enjoy it. You know, it's quite interesting. After he fixes it up, will he even see the room again? I mean, hopefully not, unless something breaks. But this mood that I'm a servant, that what I'm doing is for the pleasure of another. Now, each of the varnas has some quality that's very helpful in bhakti, and this is one of the Shudra's qualities that's very helpful in bhakti. This mood of my pleasure is the pleasure of the customer, my mood is the pleasure of the master. So this is the mood of the devotee, right? And we see it in, it sparks up sometimes in our human relationships. It like there's a little, the lust parts for a moment here and there, and we get a little glimpse. And it's such a wonderful feeling, isn't it? When we feel that we've given pleasure to someone else and we're just happy at their happiness. We're not giving pleasure to them for what they can do for us or how they think of us or anything to do with us directly. But we simply want their happiness. And so we have some idea of this, you know, that we want someone else to say yes. You know, that's my son, that's my whatever. And Jesus talks about this in the Bible, how this merchant gave some coins to three of his servants, and two of them increased the coins while the master was gone, and one of them buried it. And when the master came back and saw the two servants who had increased the coins, he said, "Well done, good and faithful servants." Well done, good and faithful servant. So that's what the devotee wants. The devotee wants Krishna to say, yes, well done. I like the way you are. I like who you are. I like your qualities. I like how you behave. I like your motivations. I like them so much I want to be around them. Now, we know how that feels going from the other direction. I like to be around people who are trustworthy. I like to be around people who are grateful. I like to be around people who are reliable. I like to be around people who are thoughtful, who are intelligent, who are humorous and clever. I mean, if we look at the list of the 26 qualities of a devotee, if we look at the 50 qualities that the pure jiva has, well, I want to be around people like that. I like being around people like that. It's a pleasure to be in their company. It's a pleasure to do things with them. I like to be with them simply to be with them. What activities we do together are often superfluous. It's just the pleasure of their company, right? So Krishna also wants that, and the devotees want to give that to Krishna. So how do we get these good qualities? Well, in one sense, we already have them. The soul's qualities cannot be destroyed by matter, just like Krishna says that the soul cannot be withered by the wind or moistened by water or burnt up by fire. So the qualities of the soul, which are the qualities of God, are intrinsic to the soul. The soul is not just some kind of, you know, nothingness. The soul is a person. The soul is a personality. And that means that we have qualities. So they can't be affected by anything. They can't even be affected by the modes of nature. And my personal conviction is that the fact that these good qualities are intrinsic to us and can never be taken away or diminished is responsible for the fact that as conditioned souls, we have this sort of irrational, materially speaking, belief that we're good. That even if we're serial killers, and you know, even if we bludgeon people to death to steal $20, we have this belief that I'm good, I'm a good person, I'm well motivated, I have good qualities, because it's on a certain level it's true. Huh? So how do we get these good qualities? How do we access them? We access them by we have to uncover the illusion that we're something other than a soul. We have to remove that illusion of these false identities, which are full of all these bad qualities. It's the false identities that have the bad qualities. It's something like being in a drama. I'm sure I've mentioned this before, that in the New York Temple, in the Ramayana drama, I used to play Shurpanaka. So Shurpanaka, she's a lot of bad qualities. I mean, she's lusting after Ram, and she wants to kill Sita, and so forth. She lies to her brother and manipulates her brother, Ravana, Dushyant and Dushasan. She's lying, manipulating. She's a nasty character. And when I would identify with her, I would have those bad qualities. It was hard to identify with her. You know, I actually found it quite difficult. But that's what one has to do in a drama. One has to identify with the character. And Lokamangala, who was he was playing Ravana and also he was directing, he'd say, "Come on, Armila, you know, you gotta think like a demon." So a really good actor identifies with the character, and in identifying with the character, takes on the qualities of that character. And as we identify with our false identities, we take on those bad qualities. Karana guna sangasya, sadasad, janma yonishu. We take on these different qualities, and we have these different births, and we have these different mentalities, and we imagine that they're our qualities. So we need to uncover these false identities, and the way we uncover the false identity is by working on our real identity, and our real identity is the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. And so therefore, this taking the dust from the feet. Right? Pada Saroja Rainam. Pada is feet, Saroja is the lotus, and Rainam is the dust. The dust from the lotus feet of the Brahmanas. This is referring back to previous verses, you know, whose foot dust Maharaj Prithu is talking about. That our identity becomes not just do I want to please Krishna, but I want to please Krishna's devotees, and I want to please the devotee of the devotee of the devotee of the devotee. As we were saying earlier, a reason for having good qualities is wanting to please those we love. And those who are in their proper situation, in their real identity, not only love Krishna, but they love everyone. I was just studying this in the seventh canto, how Prahlad Maharaj is saying to his teacher, Sunda and Amarka, that what is this friends and enemies business? You know, there's God and there's everyone, and I love everyone. There's no meaning to these friends and enemies. So to have this mood, I mean, the great devotees have this mood for everyone. They have the mood towards everyone. I love everyone. I serve everyone. Prabhupada, in a purport there, said that the devotee sees all living entities as their Prabhu, all living entities as their master. They fall at the feet of all living entities to serve them. But there's some special service that's done for those who are consciously, willingly, lovingly serving the Lord. And again, we have our ordinary life as examples. You know, if I want to please someone, I please their children, or their grandchildren, or their dog, right? I mean, you see this when I visit my youngest son, I take a walk there, and or my oldest son, same thing, he did my sons. When I take a walk in the morning, I'm very likely to see people walking their dogs. It's pretty common, I mean, pretty much, unless I go like at 3 a.m, but if I go like at 5 or later, there'll be people walking their dogs. And if you say to them, what a beautiful dog, or what a well-behaved dog, you know, they're immediately pleased. And if their dog isn't well-behaved, they feel very embarrassed, you know, if their dog starts barking at you and so forth. So Krishna's very, very pleased when we serve his devotees. And this is a practical measure of our genuine humility. How interesting that to be full of good qualities means that I also have this humility that I am a servant. And I am meant to serve the devotees. I am meant to give pleasure to the devotees. And I really like it that Srila Prabhupada talks about in the purport. Of course, he's talking about it in relationship to being a king. But he talks about how the king should follow the instructions of the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. And he should, how did Prabhupada say it here? Let me just look for a minute here. Where following Brahminical culture. So Kshatriyas have Kshatriya culture. Just like Balaram, you know, killing Rukmi at that wedding. That's not Brahminical culture. That's Kshatriya culture. And Prabhupada says such things were not uncommon in Kshatriya culture. But they follow the Brahminical culture. They respect the Brahminical culture. So taking the dust of the lotus feet of the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas on our heads, it certainly doesn't only refer, though it certainly does, to physically taking the dust from devotees' feet and physically putting that dust on our head. That's valid, it's included, but that's not all. It also refers to this mood of humility and service, wanting to serve the devotees, even in very menial ways. You know, we think about, cleaning up the guru's stool passing place, which was done, of course, by the disciple of Lokanath Goswami. But serving the devotees in any way. And then it also means, though, following the instructions of the great devotees. And we can see how following the instructions of the great devotees would definitely remove these coverings of these false identities, because as we follow the instructions of the great devotees, we start to identify more and more and more with our real self. And as we identify more and more with our real self, then these external these other identities become just something that we use in Krishna's service and we observe as they come in and go out of our lives. You know, we have false identities like a role, you know, I'm someone's son or daughter or husband, wife or mother, father or, you know, I'm a banker or something like that. We have roles about, oh, I'm a very happy person, or I'm a serious person. We have roles like, you know, I'm very critical, or I'm very forgiving. We have roles like, you know, I'm rich and poor, or I'm fat or thin. And all of these move through our lives. And so as we grow our real identity, those other identities, it's like that they're outside of ourselves. They're just simply some role we play in service. They come and go. We don't identify with them. And we don't identify, therefore, with the qualities that they give us. So it's by serving the great devotees, we regain our original identity because we please Krishna. Daivyeshagunamayi, mama maya duratya, mam eva ye prapadyante, mayam eta tirantite. We please Krishna. And if he's pleased, he removes the covering. He just, you know, you don't need it anymore. We develop our good qualities or reveal our good qualities by serving the devotees because that's part of our identity, is to care about the devotees, to care about everyone. Everyone who loves Krishna should love everyone who loves Krishna. And we try to serve everyone. And we also develop our good qualities by serving the devotees in terms of following their instructions, which is not so easy. It's not so easy to follow the instructions of the devotees. Sometimes the instructions they give us are a little difficult or a little painful, or, you know, really impact those false identities that we're attached to. So how do we not get good qualities? What is not going to work for us? What's not going to work for us is just moving within the modes. That works to some extent. So if I start being more in the mode of passion than in the mode of ignorance, you know, instead of just sitting around eating junk food and watching garbage on television and, you know, not taking a shower, instead of doing that, if I take a shower, I eat regular meals, and I go out and get some work in the world, I try to make something of myself, I have some ambition, you know, instead of just having boyfriends, girlfriends, if I get married, I raise a family, I try to contribute to society in some way. So that will definitely, I'll manifest more good qualities if I move from the mode of ignorance to the mode of passion. And if I move from the mode of passion to the mode of goodness, if I practice, you know, different kinds of meditation, if I eat food in the mode of goodness, I practice forgiveness, I practice gratitude, I live very simply, I give up a lot of ambitions, not to sit in front of the TV, but to try to feel that peace within. I live very much in the present moment. I try to connect with God, at least in a general way. Then I'll definitely have a lot more good qualities even than someone in the mode of passion. But the problems with moving between the modes are many. Well, first of all, I tend to have a particular favorite combination of the modes because of my past lives. And so the body and the mind that I have in this life has a certain combination of the modes that it feels comfortable with. It's like, oh yeah, that's my place. Just like I was born and raised in Midtown Manhattan of New York City, and when I'm there again, I'm like, oh yeah, this is my place. There's something resonates with me of that energy. You know, it's kind of a funny thing. So, although I don't think I want to live there all the time. But we have that. So we have kind of a default value that comes with this body, and that's not easy. Kaliya talks about that to Krishna. He says, you know, I have a particular nature that's with this body. It's hard to act differently than my nature. So that's one reason it's hard to move between the modes. And another reason is that Krishna says the modes are always vying for supremacy. So let's say, you know, I make it out of the mode of ignorance, I make it to the mode of passion, I'm pretty much in the mode of passion. Every once in a while, I'm going to get overcome by the mode of ignorance. And, you know, I might be overcome by the mode of ignorance for a week or two. Or I might be overcome by the mode of ignorance long enough to insult someone I really care about, or renege on one of my responsibilities or something like that. And the same if I come to the mode of goodness. I'm going to be sometimes, you know, you can be a good swimmer in the ocean, and sometimes some wave is going to come and just, you know, topple you. So someone can be in the mode of goodness, and the mode of passion can overwhelm them, the mode of ignorance can overwhelm them. And it will sometimes. It will sometimes. We have stories of these great great, great, great brahmanas who were in the mode of goodness, and they got overwhelmed. Sometimes they get overwhelmed by anger and they curse somebody, or they get overwhelmed by lust, and these stories are in the Bhagavatam. So you can't stay just in the mode of goodness or just in the mode of passion. You can't even just stay in the mode of ignorance. Every once in a while the mode of goodness is going to come along. You're going to have a little glimmer of the mode of goodness. So that's another reason. So we have the reason that we tend to have a default value that it's hard to break out of. We have the reason that even if we do break out of our default value, we can be beset by the lower modes. And another reason is that anywhere you are in the modes is still selfish. Whether it's, I'm just an easygoing guy, I'm not much ambitious, I just want to go to work and then drink my beer in front of the TV. Or whether it's, yes, I do good for the world, and I open hospitals, and I give in charity, and I take good care of my family, and I'm patriotic. Or whether it's, yes, I am very loving and generous and kind and forgiving. It's still all about me. Right? We talked about that the ultimate motive of the devotee for their good qualities is to satisfy the Lord, to satisfy the Lord's devotees. But in the modes, that's absent. The modes are all different shades of ego. There are different degrees and kinds of ego. And on the one hand, we can say the mode of passion is better than the mode of ignorance, and the mode of goodness is better than the mode of passion. That we can say that. But in another way, they're all rotten. They're all lousy. They're all awful. They're all egotistical. And a sattva-gun egoist doesn't really have good qualities. And the reason for that is that if ultimately I'm selfish, if ultimately it's about preserving a selfish false, and they're all related to false identities. Goodness, passion, ignorance, they're all related to false identities. As long as I'm selfish and I'm trying to maintain a false identity, then I'm going to have fear. Because my false identity is shaky. And I talk about this a lot. Because my false identity is shaky. It's doomed to be destroyed. My false identity will definitely be destroyed at death. And bits and pieces of my false identity are going to be destroyed and created over the course of my life. Now, if I'm identifying with these false things, I have a strong urge as a soul to exist. So if there's some threat to my identity, if the threat is strong enough, and my fear is great enough, and my attachment to that false identity is great enough, I'm going to be willing to do anything to continue to exist. And even in law, it's accepted that if people commit some crime in self-preservation or self-defense, that is not considered a crime. And so, therefore, what we will do if we're identifying falsely in the modes is if our identity is threatened enough, all of our good qualities can go out the window. Well, that means they weren't really good qualities. It means our only quality was this false identity and this self-preservation. Now, people in the mode of ignorance will throw their good qualities out the window very easily. People in the mode of passion, it takes a lot more of difficulty, right? What Radhanaswami likes to quote, that a person can be understood by their ability to tolerate provoking situations. So we can tolerate provoking situations. I'm not talking about repressing, but actually being undisturbed by them to a greater and greater extent the higher we are in the modes, which is, of course, demonstrated by the story with Bhrigu Muni, where Lord Brahma could tolerate being insulted barely, Lord Shiva couldn't tolerate it at all, Lord Vishnu could tolerate it unlimitedly. And we saw that their Brahma and Shiva gave up their good qualities when they felt threatened. And it's interesting, they felt threatened socially. It was an identity. Oh, you're not treating me as a father. You're not treating me as a brother. And so as long as we stay within the modes, something's going to shake us out of our good qualities. And then we get so disappointed and so discouraged. I worked so hard. I read this book. I took this course. I did this, affirmation. I did this and that and the other. I did all these things to develop these good qualities. And then, God, something come up. And it's jettisoned. So that's not what's going to get us good qualities. And I'm not suggesting that people don't try to go up through the modes. I mean, it's far better to be in Rajagun than in Tamagun, and it's far better to be in Sattvagun than in Rajagun. And Srila Prabhupada says the devotee generally tries to lead a life in Sattvagun. But if we're thinking that just being in the modes is going to be the solution, just going up through the modes is going to be our solution and is going to make us happy and is going to make us, you know, that's not the case. That's not the case. So what we really have to do is what Maharaj Prabhu is asking for here. We have to be all the time, taking this dust, both literally and figuratively, from the great devotees and putting it on our head, even if we're such a great personality as a king. Even if we're a Saktivesha avatar, even if we're a king, no matter what it is, to do that, then we'll be the people that we want to be. Because who we want to be is already there. Who we want to be is already who we are. And then we'll realize, I already am the person I want to be. Not by saying some kind of affirmation and not, you know, by convincing ourselves like that. But we'll realize that it is true. I am a soul and I am the person that I want to be. And I am full of all good qualities, not for my own security, not for my own ego, but in love. So we can take questions and comments. Except that somehow I can't seem to turn my computer speakers back on. And I don't know why, so I may not be able to take any questions because I may not be able to hear anybody. Let's see if there's another way I can do it. Here we go. All right. There we go. I was able to turn it back on. Okay. So I could take, just for 10 minutes, I need to leave exactly 10 minutes today. So if anyone has questions, comments.
Well, I have one question. Can you hear me?
Sure. Yes, I can hear you.
Gosh, there's two questions. One is, what would you say about what is the art of accepting praise gracefully, and why is it, at least I feel, if somebody praises you and you said, nah, that's not true, that there's something wrong there. It just feels wrong when somebody tries to say something nice to you and you reject it out of so-called humility. It just feels like that is not right.
Well, that's kind of like if you give a present to someone and they go, nah, I don't want it. So, you know, people praising us is a kind of gift. I mean, sometimes it's manipulative, just that they want something from us. But that can be true of gifts also. So, you know, yeah, it's kind of throwing that back in their face. The easiest way is just to say, thank you. Easy. Thank you. If you want to go a little farther, you thank you. It's all the mercy of my spiritual master. And even if you don't say that, you can think that. It's all the mercy of my spiritual master. It's all the mercy of the Lord. But a simple thank you is just fine. Thank you very much. Or, you know, like I'll say to people, thank you for your encouraging words. Thank you for encouraging me. And then think, you know, it's all Srila Prabhupada's grace. Is that right?
I'm not exactly satisfied with that, because when people give you some praise, they're not. It seems like you just say, "Oh, well, thank you." Yeah, it's not enough. They want something else. Not that they want to be like praised in kind. That's not true. But I think they want a little bit more than that.
Well, then thank you for encouraging me.
Okay.
I'm grateful that you're encouraging me. Not like, oh, thank you. Be genuine. Thank you for encouraging me. Even if you don't think their praise is genuine, even if you think it's flattery, or even if you don't think it's true, or whatever, or even, you know, if they're not very expert at praising, some people are not very expert at giving praise, you can say, thank you for encouraging me. Thank you for encouraging words. You know? I'm grateful that you saw something good in me that was helpful to you. And internally you think this is all the grace of my spiritual master. And if appropriate, you can say that. Sometimes it's better just to think that. And Sometimes if you say that, people will feel that you're minimizing them, their feelings.
We have time for another question?
Yes.
How do you deal with a question, I'm sure you've heard it before, when we discussed the famous verse in Shastri Bhakti Bhagavati Kichana Sarvagunastitta Samasatesara, and you covered it well. But I've heard, and I'm sure you have too, devotees will say, you know, I'd rather be around nice materialists than devotees sometimes. They find such difficult situations, devotees that are probably genuinely advanced devotees, still exhibit so many disturbing qualities. How do you deal with that?
Well, yeah, sometimes it's nicer to be around a materialistic person who, even though they're displaying their good qualities for egotistical reasons under the modes of nature, but they're displaying those good qualities rather than somebody who's not, no matter how much they're trying to be a God-conscious person. So, you know, somebody may be on the path and trying to be a servant of God and trying to be conscious of God, whether in Krishna consciousness or in any faith. But if they're, you know, if they're struggling to be truthful, if they're struggling to be reliable, you know, you might prefer to hire a reliable plumber who doesn't chant Hare Krishna and who eats meat rather than an unreliable plumber who sits around and talks about the Bhagavatam with you if you want your pipes to be fixed. So I think it's just, you know, it's a practical thing that we just see that devotees are at different stages of advancement and they're in different places, and therefore I may associate with different devotees for different purposes. And as a practical thing, there's times when I'm going to be grateful to be with someone who's not practicing any kind of spirituality, but, you know, who has some kind of something, with gold from a filthy place even, and we can appreciate something in anyone. At the same time, we should be aware that to whatever degree somebody's under the modes, they're not completely reliable. We shouldn't be surprised that the more that someone's under the modes, the more likely it is for them to demonstrate bad qualities, even in a surprising way. So it's like we shouldn't be surprised by those surprises.
Nice.
You know, if I can get somebody who can fix my plumbing and also talk about Bhagavatam to me at the same time, hey, you know, we'll go for that.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
We'll take that. Okay, I think I should end here. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.